This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
That was a UFO beaming back at you. Now, they've been coming here ever since 1946, and they have been living and working among us in vast quantities ever since. The government knows all about them. These leaders have decided to repress this information because of the tremendous shock that it would cause to our antiquated system.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad.
You're listening to Surreal Talk, a look inside the world of cults, conspiracies, and the paranormal. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. The air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. Punks are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
The whole truth about JFK, 9/11, Area 51, the Illuminati, the moon landings, Jesus and Magdala, the CIA, KGB, and AIDS, the reptilian elite, Watergate, the New World Order, Bilderberg, the MKUltra Project, the history of the world and the oppression of the human consciousness, and the truth about God, the devil, heaven, hell, and the delicate fabric of the universe.
You gotta say, I am as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Now your hosts, Eric and Everett.
Bleak Blork, Bleak Blork, Blork, Surreal Talk, Bleak Blork, Lineup Media, Blork. Oh, they can't understand Alien. Sorry, we did a lot of research this week on aliens, and I just started the show and talking like an alien. I don't know what. But anyways, welcome to Surreal Talk. It's a lineup at... You liked that, didn't you? You liked it. Don't say you didn't.
It was okay.
A lineupmedia.fm production. Brought to you this week and every week by audible.com. Go to our website, surrealtalkpodcast.com, and find the banner for Audible to create your own 30-day trial account and get a free audiobook download. And if you're looking to do some shopping on Amazon, again, visit our website, click the Amazon banner, and anything that you purchase is going to directly help support our crazy show. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Hey, Eric. Everett.
Alex is back with us.
We got Alex again this week.
Thanks.
Love having
Alex.
Yes, we do.
It's not like that, but we do like having you.
No, we love.
Maybe it is like that.
We love Alex.
It's fine if it is.
I love giving you.
Giving me what?
Giving me what?
Never mind. Anyways.
So, as you've already spoiled, and we spoiled, I guess, last week during the show, we're talking about aliens this week.
But
before we get started.
Yeah. Wah, wah, wah.
We got a little bit of bad feedback on as a comment on our website.
It had to have been from an alien then.
No, I'm pretty sure he was human.
Oh.
I don't know.
Debatable. We never met him.
He might be an alien.
He could be an alien. He's like, they're giving what up all the
his,
secrets.
What was his complaint? That the intro took so long he could have knitted a sweater by the time he was
No, I mean, that was half of it. He said nothing about knitting sweaters. He's got way more class than you.
I didn't even get through one row of knitting through there. So
basically, he starts out with, we sound like amateurs. We think we sound cool, but we aren't. We constantly interrupt each other, which he's not wrong.
I mean, the guy hurt my feelings, really, kind of. Yeah, no, I mean, agreed on the interrupting.
We can't stay on top without making stupid, unrelated, offhanded comments. It's fair. I mean, we do that. But I don't think what he gets is what the show is. This isn't like you're watching an hour and a half documentary on or a legit Discovery Channel about this stuff. We're brushing the surface. We're giving research points. We're trying to break people into these topics. We don't have the time to get in depth like I'm sure this guy wants.
Yeah, we work
day jobs where we don't have time to, you know, 8 hours of discovery Monday through Friday.
I mean, we could send reporters over to, like, you know, ancient Babylonia and look at the archaeologist sites, but it's not there for us.
And that's not us.
You know,
we're having a discussion between, and this is another thing, it's probably not been made clear, but Eric and I are brothers.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure we've said it before.
The goatees give it away.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. That's why we have a weird chemistry between us. I mean, we've grown up with each other for 30-something years now. I don't know how old we are. But we've grown up with each other. We've got our certain rapport, and that's just the way we come off.
Well, he says he thinks that we think we sound cool.
I don't think we sound cool.
Just because you're recording yourself doesn't mean you sound cool.
I mean, we might look cool.
I know.
But we probably
don't
sound cool.
He does go on to give a bunch of quotes of maybe stuff we've said, like, know what I'm saying, and fuck yeah. I mean,
he said we swear too much.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
It's probably true.
Okay. Agreed.
He goes on to say our grasp of the English language is pathetic. He gets pretty personal.
Yeah, like I said, the guy really kind of tried to hurt my feelings. I feel like he was really trying to give us a good shot.
He did make some good points. Sure, we do talk over each other. Sure, sometimes we're a little light on the actual hard info. But like I said, that's not what we're going for here.
Yep, we want to talk about this stuff with you guys in a lighthearted manner.
And we want to be more ambassadors to this world than, you know, historians.
I don't mind just exposing people to the theories or the ideas.
You don't mind exposing yourself to people?
I love exposing all kinds of ideas to people.
Right, I mean, and Alex makes a great point. We're really a lot just exposing these ideas and theories to people. You know, and if you're interested, give it another look.
Yeah, I hope we don't come off like we're trying to be experts on the subject matter either.
Definitely not definitive.
But it is something that we all find interesting and that we, you know, we really get into.
Yeah,
so
we'd like
I mean,
to have a conversation with. And a lot of you out there, I'm sure, would love to have a conversation with somebody if you had somebody around to have the conversation with.
Hey, speaking of which, didn't you say you were going to do something about call-ins from now on and maybe Skype phone calls?
Not from literally
stuff.
Now on.
No, but you get what I'm saying.
Shortly,
in the future weeks, we're going to be starting to do taking calls on Skype and taking call-ins. And if you have something to say, I mean, we're ready to hear it.
Well, a lot of normal conversations, you don't get into conspiracy theories. You can't just go out and talk to anyone about it.
Right, that's the thing. People
somebody's going to get upset.
Right.
So this is a place I can come and at least vent my feelings.
My personal, 9/11. That's my conspiracy that I really am passionate about, and I can't talk to people about it. Because
see, I thought you
they,
had a conspiracy about jumping in and interrupting people all the time.
Well,
that
yeah,
was
that,
your favorite
that,
thing
that,
to
that
do.
The guy did that. He already told us about that.
He pointed that out
for
you.
Yeah, we already know we do that.
Well, enough of spending time on this guy. Yeah, we suck. Yeah, we're not pro. Yeah, we're not on NPR.
But damn it, we have fun.
Yeah, we are doing this for people to listen to, but we're doing it more for us, kind of. I mean, we have fun with it. We get to pick a topic every week, do, you know, a college tries worth of research, and then we get to talk about it for, it takes us, what, 6-7 hours most Sundays to do this?
Yeah,
sit
yeah.
Sit here and talk.
We get about an 8-hour work day out of this is what it is. So
I mean, sorry that we don't do enough for you. If that's what this means, I mean.
Well, to that one guy.
That's just one guy. That's just one guy. You know, it hurts deep. It does. Yeah, he did cut deep. The guy was real mean.
You guys take criticism awful hard. Like, I heard you read that earlier. I thought, oh, well, that doesn't really bother me at all.
It was way in depth. It was a very long.
Yeah, he took his time
to
criticize us.
But anyway, aliens.
Aliens. So this
aliens.
Part one, we're going to try to break this week. Aliens. Aliens.
That guy?
That George Suckalopoulos or whatever his name is.
So,
Suckalopoulos?
In our planning for this episode, I thought the logical starting place for this discussion was, are we E.T.?
We could be. So, we actually could be aliens. And two other alien species, we are aliens.
Well, that's true. What I mean by this is the theory of transpermia, I'm sure you're all familiar with.
I know what transpermia is.
I had to ask.
Transpermia is basically the theory that life was seeded on this planet from an extraterrestrial source, be it direct intervention from an alien or, say, like an asteroid hits Mars, knocks off a chunk of the Mars proper, flies through space, and seeds our planet by, you know.
Who says that asteroid doesn't already have the material?
Well, without being too crude, I don't think it has much to do with alien intervention. I think transpermia, when you think about it, shooting a rock from one planet to the other, causing, creating life.
Think of the movie Prometheus. I hate to go into pop culture already.
Yeah, that's third. But yeah, I get it.
So, I mean, they were transpermian, if you ask me.
They was transperming the shit out.
Transperming, that's it.
They was transperming.
We just coined the term, transperming.
Transperming.
They were trans.
You heard it here, folks, first, folks.
So what do you guys think of
the
possibility?
I believe that, you know, these comets, meteors, asteroids, chunks of other planets probably do contain at least amino acids, things that can come together to build, you know, the first cells.
Right.
I don't think it's too far off to think that that's definitely a possibility. Like you guys said, that's the building blocks of life can be stored in these comets and asteroids.
One of the biggest theories about how Earth got its water sources from comets and asteroid impacts. Now they think it's always been here. It's just subterranean and it seeps up. But whatever. I mean, if you buy the theory that our water comes from space, then it's not hard to think about maybe there was some sort of microbe.
Well, they know that at least some of the water came from space.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, in Earth's early history, it was just bombarded with comets and asteroids for, you know, the first billion
years.
The
early solar system was more like a disk of junk than...
It was a pinball machine is what it was. It was just chaos, so...
Well, and any one of those little ice flakes or drops of water that's landing could have a cell on it.
That's
DNA,
all it takes is
some
more.
Amino acids.
Mm-hmm. You know, and if you subscribe to the theory that all of the water on Earth came from comets, you know, icy comets hitting the hot Earth, you know, that's a lot of water, a lot of comet, and it only takes one to start this. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think transpermia is too far off of a very decent theory.
Well, NASA must really believe in it too, because the amount of effort they go through to sterilize outbound probes and things like that.
And inbound also, things that come in from outer space.
Well, that's true, but that's more for sicknesses. They you know, they fear like space sickness or whatever. You never know. But like when they sent their probes to Mars, they build them in a completely clean room. So there's nothing that can go there and contaminate Mars, potentially contaminate the results that they're trying to find if there's any kind of...
They don't want to introduce life to Mars and then find it, what they brought.
Find what they brought. Yeah, that would be hell, wouldn't it? You're trying to find life and it's just, you brought it.
Oops. Oh, sorry, it was dust.
There was a little poop on a rover's shoe or its tire.
On its tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think transpermia is too crazy of a thought at all, man.
It makes total sense to me. So check that out if you're interested in some weird shit to think.
Even something crazy to think is maybe another planet had a large volcano and it went off with enough force to blast organic matter out of it.
Which is the moon of Saturn, is like a liquid ocean covered in ice, but it has water volcanoes.
Sure. Water volcanoes
that shoot like out of its atmosphere.
Yeah,
like
geysers.
Well, yeah, say more one or of less these geysers, but they're
say
like
one of these water volcanoes blasts off on another planet, and that piece of debris flies out of their orbit.
The Encladius next to like Titan is one of the most obvious spots that there would probably be life in the solar system.
Wow, that shadow awful cold during the winter.
If there's a warm core, it doesn't matter about the outer.
It could not even have eyes, but like those cave fish. It may not even need eyes.
That takes us right to the next point that we wanted to talk about: alternate evolution of life. Because you're assuming that life on other planets is going to evolve like it evolved here on Earth.
Well, there's the question of intelligent life versus regular, just regular life. But
I didn't even think we'd reached anywhere near intelligent life in that conversation.
fair.
That was organism, cell, molecule level.
When you talk about other types of life, you could talk about how it looks, or you could talk about how it's composed chemically. Like, we're carbon-based life forms.
That means everything, we're based off of carbon.
Right.
That's the most abundant element in the universe.
No, that's hydrogen. You're way off on that.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
So stars start out as hydrogen.
I'm not willing to concede that point yet.
Well, let me break it down for you. No. Stars start out as hydrogen. They fuse hydrogen to helium. Fuse helium and hydrogen into whatever the number three is and so on. That's how you get your heavier elements. It all started out of hydrogen. Carbon? I don't know. I think carbon's eight.
I don't think carbon's
but,
eight.
But, well, I mean, I guess if they were...
Helium's in there, but it's not... Helium's in there.
Helium's number two.
If these hypothetical aliens were in a different, even galaxy and solar system, they may be based on a heavier end of the periodic table where they could be based on gold or lead or something.
Carbon is six.
Carbon is six.
And then the rest of their molecules could be evenly spaced away like ours are, but higher up on the range, if you will.
Yeah, it's just another way of, building a building block of life, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I don't think
that's been proven at all either.
No, I mean, it's scientifically possible, in theory, but... There's been no silicon life found, though.
No, well, it's just an alternate theory of how it could have came about.
What was that movie? Did you see the movie with David Duchovny called Evolution? Where there was a silicone-based organism that, crashed on Earth, and it evolved at such a crazy rate. Like, at first, it was just a little bitty mushroom.
Was it like Venom?
No.
Oh, from Spider-Man?
Then it started being, mushrooms that kind of popped out spores, and life got bigger and bigger and bigger over the course of, a week or so until there's this giant alien thing roaming through the desert they end up having to take out with, I think they use dandruff shampoo.
Sure.
Because how arsenic for a carbon-based life form is a poison, they found that selenium for a silicon-based life form was its equivalent of...
Head and Shoulders was
sulfate
the...
or whatever is like the main ingredient of Head and Shoulders. So they pumped that sumbitch full of that and it killed it.
Oh.
But, it's just another type of life in the universe.
Yeah. So. Man, I'm telling you, man, there could be so many different forms of life that evolve on just a different scale that we're even, I don't know, man. I try to think I can't wrap my human head around way life could evolve on other planets at far reaches of the galaxy.
Well,
I don't know. You know what I mean? There could just be so many differences. We're thinking a humanoid shape, and that might not even be the case, man.
It could be a blob.
What about the blob? You know what I mean?
Insectoids from a
so many
jellyfish-like deal.
Sure.
I don't think that we should limit our thinking on how life could evolve just basically because of how humans evolved on this planet.
Because it evolved into a humanoid shape and... We evolved in a Goldilocks zone within the right temperature for ice to melt and everything else. Well, in another solar system, their Goldilocks zone may be totally different than ours. They may need superheated and swimming in, nitrogen or something.
They might not need water to live. They could have liquid methane. Could be that
their water.
Titan. Yeah, exactly. I just don't like to narrow it down to try to think that they evolved. Any alien life form could have evolved like a human did with just. All the different variables involved, why would we think that they did it like we did?
That's a good question. So moving on, the question comes up is how if life isn't just on this planet, how much life should there be out there, for instance, in our galaxy? And a man named Frank Drake, developed an equation in 1961 mm-hmm. eventually called the Drake Equation.
Yeah.
To, that's not just a clever name then.
No. To help kind of work out how many species there or civilizations, intelligent civilizations, there should be in our galaxy. So the equation looks like this. N equals N being the number of civilizations. R, which is how fast stars form in our galaxy, times F to the P, which is the percentage of stars that have planets, or F sub P, times NE, which is the number of Earth-like planets around each star that has planets, times the percentage of Earth-like planets that develop life, times the percentage of planets with life that develop intelligent life, times the percentage of intelligent species that go on to create technology that could be detected by an outside civilization like ours, for example, like radio signals. And then you multiply that finally by the number of years an advanced civilization takes to release detectable signals.
Okay, hang on. I've got that equation in front of me, and I still don't understand anything that you said. So maybe, and I'm so saying I'm looking at it. So can you try to explain this to the listeners and viewers to make this maybe just a little more simple? Because this is kind of...
So basically what they're saying is if you look out in space, there's a certain number of stars, right?
Okay, yeah, and I've always heard the thing that there's more stars in the sky than grains of sand in the ocean.
There's 100 billion plus stars or whatever in our galaxy. So there's an amount of those stars that have planets, right?
Okay, yeah.
So that's a fraction down. This is the equation. Then there's a fraction of those planets that have...
Earth-like
planets. Or a fraction of those stars that have Earth-like planets.
Right.
There's a fraction of those that could support life. There's a fraction of those that supported life that became intelligent. Intelligent enough to send out a signal. So it boils it down and down and down.
Okay, just to be clear, I understood it, but I didn't like the way you explained it, so I want you to go back through it again because it was...
One of the big problems with that equation is the time constraints. Like, these civilizations could have came, produced their radio signals, and then died before their radio signal ever traveled far enough for us to see it.
Right.
Even if we received one of these... radio signals or technological beacons, if you will, from another planet, they may have already went extinct by the time we react.
Well, true. If something's 10,000 light years away and we just received their EM signal, it happened 10,000 years ago. That travels at light. So
exactly.
You're going to have a hard
snail
time.
Snail mail to the max.
Yeah, and even snail getting mail. A message back saying, yes, we saw you.
That's like dial-up. That's like trying to check your email on dial-up.
20,000 years, a little worse than dial-up.
You've got mail.
The guy who said that's long since dead, his family.
Yeah, you hope they wrote it down in some
so
gold
I,
or something.
I found an article on Business Insider that did a pessimistic and optimistic values for the Drake equation. Business Insider, weird, whatever. Still the same equation. These guys are math nuts, so it makes sense that they try to figure something like this out. So they start out with the rate of star formation is the same, 7 stars per year. The fraction of stars with planets, pessimistically they said 80% of stars have planets. Optimistically, 100% have planets.
Right.
So then they said the number of Earth-like planets per planetary system, pessimistically, a half of one, optimistically, two.
Okay.
So you're seeing a range coming up here between worst-case scenario and best-case scenario.
And that's per star.
Right. That's per star on that level. So on for the next part, which is the fraction of Earth-like planets that evolve life, pessimistically, they said 1% would evolve life.
Okay.
Optimistically, 100%.
See, I'm much more leaning towards 1% on life.
Right, right. This is
just because it's in a Goldilocks
scale. This is going to, at the end of this, is going to give us a range.
Okay.
So then there's the fraction of life-bearing planets that evolve intelligent life. Pessimistically, 1% of the ones that evolve life will be intelligent. Optimistically, 100% that evolve life.
There's no way it could be 100%.
Exactly.
That's why I don't like this list already.
Well, I mean, it's the pessimistic and optimistic, so it's somewhere in the middle.
I like the medium. Give me 3%.
Well, that's the great thing about this equation. You could sit in your basement, put a spreadsheet together, and put all the the times and stuff, and then just work with your variables. Okay, I figure it's going to be 80% this time. I'm looking at it.
Because they have no way to measure any of those variables.
Right.
So
we don't
know. Can't actually.
But that's why it's an equation. If we could fill in those numbers perfectly, we would know.
Right. Yeah.
Or even a few of them would help.
And there might even be more values that take into consideration than what this guy has, but this is a pretty good start. Anyway, the fraction of those intelligent species that develop communication technology, pessimistically, they say 50%, optimistically, 100%.
But then again, on our scale, we're reading 1-to-1.
Well,
intelligent life created it. So we know this, so it's 100%.
At least on our planet.
Right. Well, that's all we can measure.
The length of time technological civilizations actually communicate. So the times that they're may have ascended and are putting out something that's communicable, like radio signals.
Right. And the thing is, you have to be in that time frame.
Right, if you pass it up or before it. So they say pessimistically, there's a 100-year window. If you think about humans, we're almost right there.
That's 100 years. That's
when
makes
did
sense.
The first radio signals start going out?
Late 1800s ish,
1880 roundabout.
Right.
Oh God, that's like That's kind of bad, because if you got only about a 100-year window.
150 maybe by the time we get done putting TV and shit out like that or whatever.
Good thing we're doing a World War III episode.
Pessimistically 100, optimistically 10,000 years. So that gives us a range of total number of civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy right now to be either 0.014 civilizations
really
on the pessimistic level or 140,000 on the optimistic side.
Ooh.
So let's split the difference and say there's probably somewhere around 70,000 civilizations according to the Drake equation.
Well, if you split it completely, I would say even if you go just 10% over pessimistic, then you've got 10 of them or whatever. You know, that's better than 0.01.
Yeah, even 10 individual civilizations other than our own. I mean, the galaxy's huge, but that's good news. That's a light at the end of the tunnel.
Sort of. Even if you have 140,000 of them, say that 10,000 years is your length of your
time
ascension or whatever.
Yeah.
Think about how old our galaxy is, 10 billion years-ish. Our sun is kind of a mid-age.
4.5 bill.
Roughly. So say you give them 10,000 years each, and there's 140,000 of them. That means there's only roughly, I think, if my math is right off the top of my head, and I could be wrong by an order of magnitude here, but two civilizations in our galaxy at any given time capable
of communicating with each other.
Or no, not of communicating with each other.
Just of communicating.
Just of putting some sort of detectable signal out, more or less.
Okay, some sort of signal.
So in the
and then that,
of our
that's
kind of
depressing then.
That's way depressing.
Yeah, because that means it's us and one other one.
Yep. And they could be on the fucking far reaches through the galactic center.
100,000 light years away.
Exactly. I mean, we're on an arm on the one side. They're on an arm on the other.
Right. And that way we would never detect, make contact, or anything.
We got to kind of find a way to get across these great expanses.
You can
easily.
Obviously take a lot of that out because, you know, the first forming parts of the, you know, of the galaxy, I guess if a star forms, it might have, you know, let's just say there's a lot less stars at the beginning of the galaxy than there are now.
Right.
So you're going to have a lot more of a chance more recently than in the beginning stages. So you can kind of skew that to be there would be more recent ones than there were originally just due to the amount of stars in the galaxy. Then you could throw in galactic collisions and things like that, you know, to where you pick up stars or you throw stars out.
Well, that could be a civilization ender. Well, say you got a civilization that's doing really good. Bam, asteroid.
Well, at the beginning of the, I guess, universe, everything would have been much hotter, and I think that would have been detrimental
to life. That's
the
galactic background radiation you're talking about there.
Right, and not only that, but since things have cooled off more, maybe now life has a better chance to flourish easier.
I mean, very well. But so back in the 60s when Drake was talking about this, and it looked like, honestly, there should be a shit ton of civilizations. Oh, no, you know what? I'm rereading the equation. So that 140, God, I sound like an asshole now. That 140,000 number is what there is right now, not in the length of the history. So,
oh, that's right now?
Yeah, that's. I'm just reading that on this page. So,
oh, okay.
Sorry, folks. That two per at a time. It was my dumb math.
You're
so it's
shitting
more
like all
140,000.
Yeah, at least I'm coming up with it and not just leaving it.
Right.
Any which way. So that takes us right to our next part. If there's so many civilizations,
these almost 150,000 possible.
Right. And if it's only 100,000 wide, that means for every, you know. And I realize it's a three-dimensional plane, but within one every light year or so, there should be a...
What? Gosh, yeah, that's kind of crazy.
And if you think about this, it's 4 light years the closest star for us, Alpha Centauri.
Andromeda. Andromeda's the closest.
That's a galaxy.
Yeah, and that's further away.
Yeah, that's going to collide with about 4 billion years.
So Alpha Centauri...
Right, I did have that all fucked up,
Alpha Centauri is only 4 light years away?
Roughly 4 or so light years away.
So if we sent a signal to that planet, it would only take 8 years for them to send it back, theoretically.
That's if they...
If it's 4, exactly, and they get it and immediately send it back.
And that's providing that our signal's traveling at the speed of light.
Well, it would be. That's,
well,
that's
real close, anyway.
Through a vacuum, that's what it's supposed to be, the speed of light.
You got a chronographer?
Like a speed, like a radar for light? No, Einstein took care of that for us. We don't
He's good. He does all that kind shit for us. You know, the equations, relativity. We got a guy to figure that stuff out for us.
Good guy, Einstein. But anyway, there was a man named Enrico Fermi. I'm sure everybody's heard of Fermi. There's Fermi Labs outside of Chicago. He's
affirmative.
A big physicist. Affirmative, he says.
Affirmative.
Is that where Neil deGrasse Tyson works?
He may have worked
Hayden Planetarium.
Oh, sorry.
But Enrico Fermi comes up with something eventually is called the Fermi Paradox, which is if there's so many damn civilizations out there possibly right now.
Which we've learned from the Drake equation.
And other such, you know, thoughts that there should be life. Where the hell are they?
Yeah, why haven't we... made contact. Why haven't they made contact with us? Why can't we tell that there's any other alien civilizations out? That's what the Fermi Paradox is about. There's so many out there. You know, I mean,
well, there's a lot of variables in that. Maybe they're intelligent enough to know to hide.
You right. know what I mean? If they're observing us, they don't want nothing to do with us.
Here's the exact basic points made by Enrico Fermi and Michael Hart, which helped him with the original layout.
Bret Hart?
No, not the Hitman.
Oh.
There are billions of stars in the galaxy that are similar to the sun, many of which are billions of years older than Earth. With high probability, some of these stars will have Earth-like planets, and if the Earth is typical, some might develop intelligent life. Makes sense. So some of these equations or civilizations might develop interstellar travel, a step that Earth is investigating now. Makes sense. Even at the slow pace of currently envisioned interstellar travel, the Milky Way could be completely traversed in 1 million years. So what they're saying is, even at the slow pace we have now, you could get across the sucker in 1 million years.
Really?
A million yep. years is way too long for anyone to have to travel, or civilization for that matter.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't be able to do it our lifespan, like he was just saying, you know, 110 years.
You wouldn't be able to do it in any civilization known to man's lifespan.
You just get it like a generational ship where you just...
That's what you'd have to do. You'd be a sea...
And if somehow you can get a ship that would last a million years.
Be a spacefaring species is what you'd be. You'd be...
Nomadic at that point, because there's no going home. So once a generation's away from home, they're nomadic. So you're going to be nomadic.
Fair enough,
even
yeah,
if you're
because...
just going on a one-way journey that long. So you're going to have to stop... Mine,
here's an interesting question.
Repair,
this is something.
Build.
This is off topic a little bit, but if you were a spacefaring species or civilization,
or race, or
and that you weren't in contact with the sun, like you know, would you, and you were in space for 100,000 years, would your species get gray?
Would they evolve? I mean, evolution, I don't believe
obviously
would
there's
stop.
Not as much. No, it wouldn't stop.
Once
you're absolutely
you got
right.
into the
so
orbit.
There's not as much light out there.
Your bone mass.
So maybe your eyes
no
have
gravity.
To expand a little bit to try to gather the more light because and there's not as
that,
much light out there. So I'm just saying.
It saves power in your lighting on your ship if you don't need bright light.
Right, if you can
this
see
sounds
in
like
a very dim.
An argument someone's made a few times before. We'll get
to
that.
It's off the top of my head.
We'll get to that.
I have never heard it, so I was just playing.
So with the Fermi paradox.
That's a pretty good
one. It makes a good point. Where is everybody? So you got to ask the next question. How are we looking to find this life if we think it's out there?
With binoculars.
With binoculars? That's one way to start. Just look up in the sky with your binoculars, see if you see ET going by, give it a peace sign out of
yeah,
this,
where are, where
this
is
Ford
everyone?
Galaxy.
Well, I guess if we're not looking for them, we definitely ain't going to find them, are we?
No, we got to be looking for them. So,
well, I look up every night. I haven't seen shit. Well, I saw one UFO. But
we talked about that
last week. Yeah.
Remember my weird thing I saw? That's the one thing.
Oh, yeah, your smoke monster?
That keeps me thinking that there's something else going on than what's right in front of my eyes. That's the only thing that I've ever seen that I just
I don't know about
blew
aliens,
my mind.
But spaceships for sure.
Well, we do have spaceships already. Those are human made.
I've seen them.
So we're searching with things like Kepler, which is the Kepler Space Telescope. It's an observatory that's out in space.
Does it
similar
just
to Hubble.
Pick up visual light, or is it a radio?
Well, it's used to detect planets traversing. They're using the traversal method to be detected, where a planet
dimming of lights
right passes in front of its star, and they'll notice like a 0.5% dimming in the output of that star.
All right. Lumens or whatever they measure.
Luminosity is
what. Yeah, in the luminosity of it, right? So they can tell, you know,
brain
roughly
training
how
game.
Big a how big a planet is by how much light is goes across it. What, your laptop just died?
Beautiful.
It's weird.
Is it still recovering from the soda from last week?
It comes on when it's closed.
That's so weird.
I don't know.
We also use the probes like we were talking about earlier, though, like the MARBS probes, the Truth, and what was the other one? Sojourner, Freedom, or whatever. We've had a whole bunch of probes we've sent to
that. I was wondering about that Kepler. When the lights dim, does it only pick up the visual light range, or I guess it picks up every spectrum
infrared?
That the star
I'm
is throwing
sure.
off?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
It's way more than just visual. I mean,
sure. Everything so. They can put a sensor for, huh?
That's it. I don't know exactly how the Kepler works. I don't know if it's a radio telescope or if it's a visual telescope.
I bet it's
telescope.
Got every bit.
Why wouldn't it have every
isn't
type
Isn't it brand new?
They yeah, just it's ship a few it up years, there? Yeah. It's already found something like 2,300 or something exoplanets itself, which is more than half of all the exoplanets.
Did you talk
found.
About Hubble?
I haven't mentioned it yet, but Hubble's another way. That's more astronomical.
Okay, so for people that don't know, and myself, what would be the major differences between the Kepler Space Telescope and the
Kepler's
Hubble?
Kepler's looking for planets. That's its
mission. That's its whole
mission.
Gig is to look for exoplanets
now,
or
is
habitable.
Is it just looking for planets or
Earth
light?
Oh, well, it's looking for any planets.
Okay,
it's not. It doesn't have the resolution to where we could find the smaller Earth-like planets. It finds them, but it's much easier to find your big Jupiters.
Okay, so basically, it can differentiate differentiate between a gas planet and a rocky planet, or is it just size
difference? Size difference, and I'm sure there's some way they
Composition.
Can tell. Right. They know when it's how close it is, what it's made of. They figure all this shit out. Again, you can look this stuff up. We apologize, but we're not scientists.
I am.
Well, you're a backyard scientist. There's a difference.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a very good. I'm not a very good scientist, but I'm a scientist nonetheless. I didn't say anything about being established.
Voyager and the probes of Saturn. Voyager 1 and 2. Systems. But yeah, we were talking about it before. I don't think Voyager so much as a search for extraterrestrial life, more than it's a time capsule and just an easy way to.
I mean, that's a good way to look at it, is as a time capsule.
Because of what they put on it. They put on a map, more or less, to Earth using, what was it, 13 pulsars?
Yeah, yeah. They let anyone that finds this know, we're here. This is how you can find us. But it's not like, your interstate maps. This is something weird.
So they made a 3D map, basically, of the locations of 13, certain class of pulsars.
I lost all my tabs.
Because pulsars are easier to see because they flash.
Well, it's not that. They have a specific spin, and it's like a fingerprint. Oh. So if you mark that spin on there, and then you've got your other 13 ones that are shown to be a certain distance apart, you can basically use that as a map.
Like a big
And then they
stone.
Mark our place in the middle of all that. That's where we are. So that was put on there. There was also stuff like some music and other things put on there. But they sent that out towards the edge of the solar system, late 70s, Voyager 1 and 2?
Yeah, yeah. And I believe Carl Sagan was the one responsible for
the map.
They charged him with the of
making
what
recording.
What do we put on here?
Yeah.
What should we...
It's a good question. I mean, you're sending it out. You got to have your...
Right. I mean, if the chances are that this could be found by an extraterrestrial species, what can we put on here? I mean, you're basically trusting, the smartest... what was he? Just the smartest, guy that
he's
had
an astrophysicist.
To do astrophysist.
Like your NG, Neil deGrasse Tyson's.
He was a really great science communicator, too. He could break it down for people. That was
important. He could convey his message easily without confusing you. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what I like about Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't get all jumbled up in big words and shit like that. he doesn't bog you down in semantics. You know what I mean? He gives you the basic idea about it and oh, yeah, well, that makes sense.
Sounds familiar.
Huh.
I mean, I don't want to get all high and mighty, but that's kind of what we do.
Yeah.
Hey.
Except he at least he knows.
Are you saying that we're the Neil deGrasse Tyson of conspiracy radio?
Well, maybe of conspiracy cult and paranormal radio, but no, we're not that smart.
We're definitely not astrophysics.
We do something similar, but no, we don't do the same thing. All right, where were we? We were talking about...
did we get to Hubble?
Fermi, yeah, then we were talking about...
Did we have a probe on the moon of Titan around Jupiter?
We put one down on Titan. We put probes down on Venus.
And it found
we
actual
put them on Mercury.
Water, frozen water on Titan, I believe.
No, Titan has methane, liquid methane.
Look at this image. This was also on the Voyager. never mind.
Just what a man
so
and a woman
look
like.
So the picture he was showing, it was anatomic pictures of a man and woman to show what humans look like if somebody finds it.
Something.
It was all kinds of different information they could put on there to kind of let any other civilization know what we were about. You know, we are designed this way. This is what our bodies are like. You know, like he was just saying, an anatomical picture of a male and a female, directions on how to get here. You know, and it was actually a record.
Yeah,
it was. You could play it on a record player.
It was
the
a big
Voyager
gold
1
record.
Disc. Yeah, it was. It was. You could play it on a record player, and it even showed on the disc.
I don't think that you.
Look it up. You know, I know you don't believe me. I see the look in your face. Like you were saying earlier, I've known this guy for 35 years. He doesn't believe me right now.
Hey,
look it up.
They may have. I'm not doing it.
When we're looking for aliens.
That means he concedes the point and realizes I'm right.
When we're looking for aliens, don't we have other large installations on Earth that search for them, like giant?
I'm sure there's giant radio telescope arrays.
China just built the biggest
one
ever.
There's a real big one down in Cuba. James Bond movie had the one that was in Cuba.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
That's not actually in Cuba, but it's a real radio telescope that exists. It's,
yeah, and
it's maybe Brazil or
like
somewhere.
Half a mile across or
something like that.
That's crazy. There's another big one. I think it was in the Antarctic. I think they built a huge one in Antarctica. I'm pretty sure they did. They built one in Antarctica.
That'd be news to me. That'd be a good spot because you got no light pollution to
right.
I guess if it's a radio telescope, that wouldn't really matter.
Oh, well, okay, you're talking about radio telescope. I don't know if it's a radio telescope or not.
Well, if it's
telescope.
A giant satellite set in the ground, it's probably a radio telescope.
Is that
they
what
even
is?
Have giant satellite arrays where it's, 30 of these giant satellite dishes set up all pointing
the
same
direction.
Oh, there
is something called the South Pole Telescope Project.
Oh,
wow.
Shut your mouth.
I bet that one's hard to keep up.
All right, Eric is right from time to time.
Twice in a row? This never happened.
Two times in a row?
I thought the logical way, though, moving on to end this episode out, was a discussion on the Kardashev scale, which you guys hadn't heard of before I had told you about it.
Kardashev. I had never heard of it.
Yeah, the guy was Russian that originally came up with it. Let's see if
I can find
his name.
That was a lucky guess. I have no idea what it is.
I think I drank Kardashev vodka before.
Mm.
So the original Kardashev scale in 1964 defines three levels of civilizations based on the magnitude of power available to them. So what they say is a type one civilization has the ability to harness all of the energy created on your own planet. Tidal energy, wind energy.
Okay, so let me stop you there. That means all everything. Together.
Geothermal. So, solar.
But let me ask you one more question. It's not saying that they can harvest this energy from there. They can just harvest an amount of energy equal to what you can get from your planet.
There's like a mechanical equivalent of power, so to speak.
Okay, so what you're saying is they're not harvesting all wind technology, all wave technology.
You couldn't live on a planet that is completely set up for
exactly. There'd be no room to live.
You got solar detectors. You got windmills everywhere.
So what that means is level one, you can harness the equivalent of all the energy. So, harnessable.
Fusion is the big deal here.
Okay.
So if you can get something like fusion where you're just taking an amount of hydrogen and fusing it into usable energy, using helium, the byproduct gives us energy out of it.
Like our sun.
Exactly. Right. It would take something like, I don't know, several hundred billion like tons of hydrogen to do this a year. But luckily for us, it's basically only the equivalent of 1 square kilometer of seawater.
Really?
And if we were to try to exhaust all of our seawater by fusing it into helium, and to create energy out of it, it would take over trillions of years. So if we were to find out a way to take the hydrogen out of water, fuse it into helium, take the byproduct.
And you're talking about nuclear fusion is what you're talking about.
Yes, fusion, just like the sun. If we can figure out how to do that, our energy problems are gone, and we would be a type one civilization. We have the ability to create more energy than the output of our home our planet.
I got something. I'm a little off topic. Don't lose your place. And this is a question. This is because I'm ignorant to the fact. Someone told me the sun's not actually on fire.
It's not on fire.
That's just the light from the nuclear reaction. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, it's hot. And the
sun's also not yellow.
And it's white.
It's white.
Yeah. But isn't that crazy? Because you always think of, you know, when you see the sun's on fire, it's a big fiery ball. I always did myself. That
it
was
looks
something.
Like well, a you, giant explosion going off.
It does
it
kind of, but
like.
Whenever you look closer at like the way like solar flares work, the way they ride across magnetic field lines and they're actually made of plasma. Neat.
So here's what you do, people. You get your telescope out and go look at the sun. No, don't do that. Don't do that.
You can do that with the right filters.
With the right filters.
You can look directly at the sun and see, like, the crazy waves across the sun. Like, have you ever heard of solar quakes and things like
that? Yeah, you can see all that. But I watched a video where they took, like, a pig's eye and put it right behind the telescope, and then they shot the telescope at the sun, and it just...
Might as well just take a magnifying glass. We got the idea.
Remember that video? It had the saucer flying just above the sun, harvesting the fusion
energy. Yeah, we talked about that last week.
That was such a great video.
Listen to last week's episode if you missed it. That was cool.
I love that video.
So moving on with Kardashev scale, the Type 2 civilizations is a civilization capable of harnessing all of the power from their parent star.
Wow.
So say we could somehow build, like, for instance, a Dyson sphere. Everybody's familiar with the Dyson sphere. It's a theoretical construct that's built to completely contain a star and capture all of its radiant energy.
So if you can imagine, like, a big ball.
Think of it like
ball.
A nut. Like a nut. Like there's a peanut on the inside and
a shell
on the outside.
There you go. It's a shell of a nut. It's the walnut.
And the shell gets charged.
And the shell is a star.
Puts out the energy. Right.
The nut's the star. The shell's the Dyson sphere.
That's right. That's what I meant. So if you can do that somehow, then you are now a Type 2 civilization.
Man, having
let's talk about that for a second.
Transfer that much energy somewhere?
How much energy would you to harvest all the energy of your star? I mean, what would you need that for interstellar travel? That's got
to
be
the
only
materials it would take to do that, to build a shell that large.
If you want a Death Star planet, you're going to need that kind of energy.
You're going to need a workforce out of this world.
Even if you build something that's half an AU in radius, so basically a full AU in diameter, the amount of metal you would need to do that.
You're not getting it here on Earth.
That's a distance from the Earth to the sun, an AU?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then take that, and it's not just a straight line.
It's like 93 million miles or something like that.
Right. It's half of our complete orbit, basically.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you take that and your pi r squared, you come up with just a ginormous amount of square, mileage that you'd have to cover just in a thin.
There's not enough iron ore on this earth. I mean, maybe we tap into the core. I don't know.
You couldn't use iron ore. It'd be some sort of exotic element.
Well, you'd have to start with iron. I mean, that's where most metals like, steel, or I guess you can go titanium or anything more rare. But
that's rare, right? Volume of material.
If you're
iron is what you're going to want.
If you're an interstellar space traveler, you're going to get the best material. Screw steel.
Right, you're not building your Dyson sphere out of 2x4s.
Yeah.
Well, to move
probably
further,
diamonds.
If you've got the ability that you're almost a type 2, you've probably got matter replication, matter to energy conversion.
Fair enough.
So what they say the most likely way to build one of these Dyson spheres is self-replicating robots. that fills itself in.
So you just have a little robot that build their own other little robots, and eventually you've just got robots.
Geometrically, it increases, and then you've got Skynet.
I think they've done that with molecules even. They've had
self-replicating robots.
Small molecules that could just replicate themselves into very basic shapes.
Mm-hmm. So what's part three of the Kardashev scale?
Part three is a civilization capable of capturing all of the output from their parent galaxy. However, or to generate an equivalent amount of power, which
my word.
But, well, yeah, I get that, but that's
just
crazy.
A ginormous.
So you're talking to hundreds of billions of stars that you're harnessing the power from.
That you're capable of harnessing.
That you're capable of
harnessing/slash generating whatever.
Right.
So that's just crazy.
We're nowhere near a level one on the Kardashev scale.
Right.
Humans are nowhere near a level one.
Anybody who's familiar with physics is familiar with Michio Kaku.
Oh, yeah. I like that guy.
He's an astrophysicist, almost a rock star. He helped create string theory.
Mm-hmm.
He claims that Earth is roughly a 0.74 on the Kardashev scale.
Yeah, really?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. He says that in 100 to 200 years, we have the potential to be a full type one. If we could figure out fusion and whatnot, we could be a full type one civilization. And he says in a few thousand years, we might be able to hit type two and come up with a way to capture all the power from our star.
I guess if technology keeps increasing like right. It is, I think there's a plateau we'll hit before that. But go ahead.
And he thinks, and this is
fair enough. I mean, that's a good point.
This is his words, not mine. That in 100,000 to even a million years, we could be a type three civilization, somehow capturing all the power output of our galaxy.
Now, I imagine we'd look drastically different than the humans.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's one thing, too. You got to think about why you're at that point. You don't need energy like you need. You're probably not even a corporeal being at that point.
Right.
You don't have a body, so to speak, probably.
And then you probably wouldn't even be the same civilization.
Yeah,
you've
rose above your humanly shell.
Well, not just humanly, your corporeal shell. You're real.
You're spiritual now.
Well, if you can transfer your matter to energy, you are probably a being of energy. At this point.
I mean, you could be technically.
I mean, are we delving into the spiritual realm here? I mean,
depends on what you believe, I suppose.
So there's extensions to the original scale that go on to say that a type four is a civilization that can. And this was not the original the original Kardashev scale. It's
people like, adding on to it.
For instance, there's Barrow's micro-dimensional mastery that has up to seven types. But the going along the traditional scale to move it forward is the type four where you can. Harvest all the potential energy in your universe.
In your universe.
Right.
Assuming there's more than one universe.
So you're all
universe.
Powerful.
Everything you know in your reality.
In your universe.
Well, there's a part five that goes on to state, not only can you take yours, you've mastered extra-dimensional travel, and you can tap multiple universes.
That sounds like Lucy. You ever see that movie?
I love that movie.
I didn't like it.
he hates it. I loved it. It's great.
Not a big fan.
Great movie.
Scarlett Johansson.
Then there's a whole other type of a Kardashev scale rethinking that was done by John Barrow. And it basically goes by the fact that
it's the one that goes down in scale?
No, hold on.
In
his scale, type one is capable of manipulating objects over the scale themselves. So, like, you're able to build structures, you're able to mine and join and break solids. Like, standard object manipulation. That's type one.
We're there.
Right.
But not creating or decreasing the mass at all, just rearranging.
Right, you can't do that really anyway. But type two is capable of manipulating genes and altering the development of living things, transplanting, replacing parts, et cetera. So, like, genetic engineering, that's type two. So, we're there.
Yeah, we have GMOs, man.
Right. So, and then type three is capable of manipulating molecules and molecular bonds. So you can manipulate objects at the molecular level. I don't understand exactly how they mean with either technology.
I think nature does all of those things already.
Well, I mean, everything exists in nature, so yes. Going on, though, type 5 is the ability to manipulate at the atomic level. So engineering nucleuses and whatnot like that.
That's subatomic.
Well, that's true. I guess that's I meant nucleons, not nucleus. Sorry.
Nucleons?
Nucleons. Type 6 is able to manipulate the elementary particles of matter like quarks and leptons and things that create your subatomic particles. And the omega, which is, I guess, level 7, is capable of manipulating the basic structure of space and time.
Oh, wow. You're talking like Doctor Strange.
God mode.
God mode.
God mode, right. Yeah,
like
God mode.
Q from Star Trek. I mean, I can make something exist. I can make something not exist.
Yeah. Easy as that.
Time isn't a thing. It's
We talked about this. They don't have the same constraints that we do with space and time. They might be able to access time like we access space.
Right.
That's such a cool theory to me and a nice way to entertain it.
Yep. So, that's basically it. If you, it's just two different ways to think about how to classify a species, either by the amount of energy they can create and use, or by how much they can manipulate reality, be it at a construction level or all the way down to a space-time manipulation. So
that's pretty gnarly shit, man.
Yeah, I mean, if there ever has been beings of that kind of magnitude, there's no reason they wouldn't have stopped by just to check out Earth. Boom, they're there in an instant. You know, yeah, why not? They got some
godlike
powers.
Because we're assholes. That's why Shakespeare tells everybody, why wouldn't aliens come talk to us? I wouldn't talk to us either.
Maybe
I
they
mean,
did.
As a whole.
I think they did.
As a group, humans are pretty.
Well, there's the old saying that a person is smart, people are stupid.
Yeah. There you go. And I can believe that so much. As that, like, you even said this on one of our other episodes, Alex, and I don't remember which one it was, but in small groups, people are fine. And
yeah, sure.
But when you get into bigger groups, it's just like
wild animals.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean,
like herding buffalo.
Every man
they're
for
terrible people
in the group, which doesn't work.
Yeah, it's humans are terrible, terrible.
I guess that's pretty much all I had for part one. Anything you guys want to round out with on this?
No, I liked part one. Part one, I'm happy with.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. So.
I'm happy with that. So let's do our outro here, you guys. Remember to like us on Facebook. Because we've been having a very big Facebook presence lately. You know.
What's our address to Facebook? What do you do?
It's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
You go to facebook.com/surrealtalk. You can also find us on Twitter at Surreal Talk Show, which we have had quite a bit.
We're getting a little bit more.
We've got a good Twitter following
now.
I'm
trying to get on there and do a little bit more Twitter stuff. We got 600 or so followers or something.
He's tweeting people.
I'm trying. I'm letting people know when our new episodes come out on Twitter.
I'm calling him Tweeter.
You shut up. Yeah, he's the little brother, in case we didn't make that clear earlier.
I exist just to give him shit.
That's pretty much it.
Also,
thanks, Mom.
Yeah, thanks, Mom. Just search Surreal Talk live stream, and you should be able to find us fairly easily.
On YouTube.
Yeah, yeah, on
say
YouTube.
That?
Yeah, I did say that.
I think on just about everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just search Surreal Talk. It really doesn't matter where you search it at. And we get some more YouTube subscribers, we'll get our own YouTube custom URL.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
We are.
Another week or two, we should
also
have.
Remember to give us a review on iTunes, Podbean,
you know, I really
Stitcher,
wish the guy we talked about
Google Play.
At the start of this episode would have taken it to an official channel like iTunes and give us a 1-star and did
he
it
should
there.
Have, yeah, he should have gave us a 1-star
instead
rating.
Of just commenting on our website. So if you're listening out there, I'm not going to say your name because I don't want to blow you out, but Go make it official, Pally, if that's the way you feel. I don't want people to go to iTunes and be like, look at all these 5 stars. These guys are probably the fucking tits. You know, they're the best.
Hey, how do
not
you think
so much.
He knew so much about the show?
He's probably listened for a while.
Well, he said he's
I've been on the show all day. What do you mean?
So, anyway.
It's a conspiracy.
give us a real rating. Do it in an official channel. I mean, if you're going to pay us,
you can even
rate
us
an email.
You
that's
can
fine.
Go to Facebook and rate us also. There's a little thing on our Facebook page that lets you can rate us 1 through 5 stars, whatever you guys feel like.
Probably a government agent trying to disqualify.
So we're going to wrap this up. You can also email us at info@surrealtalkpodcast.com. And always remember to like, comment, share, and subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever you listen to us on. Thank you for listening. This has been Surreal Talk, a lineupmedia.fm production. I think Pigpen's trying to plug a book here. Operation Paperclip.
Subscribe.
That's
subscribe.
I'm going to check out. Anyway, subscribe. Catch you next time,
Audible.com.
Peace.
Please. Wake up.
This has been Surreal Talk, a lineupmedia.fm production. Listen online at surrealtalkpodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter and get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm.
How come I know so much? What the hell is going on around here? Who are you people?
I'm mad as hell! I'm not gonna take it anymore!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.